The inquest into the death of Belfast schoolboy Noah Donoghue is continuing this week, more than 5 years after he disappeared. It's a case that has raised difficult questions, it's prompted intense public interest, and it's left a mother still searching for answers. Today we take you inside Laganside Courthouse. It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty. And Noah Donoghue was just 14 years old when he went missing in North Belfast back in June of 2020. He'd left home on his bicycle on a Sunday afternoon and he never returned. 6 days later, his body was found in a storm drain close to where he was last seen. A post-mortem determined that Noah had drowned. A police investigation was launched at the time, but no criminal charges have ever followed. And over the past few weeks, a long-delayed inquest has been hearing evidence into the circumstances surrounding Noah's disappearance and death. Jurors have listened to the original 999 call made by Noah's mother, Fiona, and to her recorded statement describing the hours after her son failed to come home. Witnesses have been giving their recollections of the day Noah disappeared, and in the past few days, police officers involved in the original investigation began giving their evidence. Slowly, a detailed timeline of events is falling into place. Well, Declan Harvey has been covering the inquest in depth for BBC Northern Ireland and for a daily podcast, The State of Us, and he joins me now from Belfast. Declan, you're very welcome to News Talk Daily.
Hi, Ciara.
We might just start, I suppose, at the very beginning. Tell us what we know about Noah and his background.
Well, the first thing we know is that this is a case that has haunted Northern Ireland for 5.5, coming on 6 years. You only have to drive around Belfast and, in fact, much further afield to see banners attached to fences, to see bumper stickers on cars with Noah's face on it. And all these people who refer to themselves as Noah's Army are looking for answers. This is the most mysterious of cases by any standards. Noah himself was 14. He was tall. He was 5'10". And by any of the normal metrics, he was a great kid. He was academically very able. He was musically able. He was able on the sports field at school. He had good friends, close friends. He talked to them an awful lot about what he was reading. He was an avid reader. He was described again and again as having a ferocious appetite to learn things and understand the world. And he would tell his friends about that. Now, his friends say that he could be quite eccentric at some times. But the reason for that, they said, and they were 14 at the time of his disappearance, they said that he was always the smartest person in the room. And although you might have thought what he was talking about was weird, let's just say, if you considered it for a little bit longer, you realized exactly where Noah's head was at, what he was thinking. The chances are that he was just that little bit further along the road than most of his friends.
And he was born in Northern Ireland, raised predominantly by his mother, Fiona, and the two of them appeared to have a really close relationship, a really close bond.
Yeah, and they lived in a flat in South Belfast. And why that's important is because Noah went to an all-boys Catholic school in the north of the city. And he would take himself across the city on his bike every day. And it's a grammar school, which means it's for academically more able kids. And even Noah's friends would say that they knew that he was from perhaps an economically more disadvantaged background than they were from. But notwithstanding that, they were 14 and no one cared at that age. Noah would cycle his way to school and cycle back. And the fact that he went to Catholic school in a predominantly nationalist area of North Belfast is important because anyone who knows Belfast knows that there are invisible lines crisscrossing this city where nationalist areas are side by side with unionist areas. And quite often, never the twain shall meet when there are people born and bred in one street and they may not know the people living in the next street, because the communities, despite 25, 26, 27 years after the Good Friday Agreement, there's still a fragmented nature to many parts of the city. And as I say, that's important, because when Noah left home, left his flat in South Belfast on that Sunday evening, that bright June Sunday evening, he cycled north in the general direction of his school. There was a loose plan to meet friends, but he turned off and headed into a unionist area of the city, an area where his mother said he knew nobody, he would have no references for. But that is the first of many questions around what happened to Noah Donoghue.
Okay, let's go to some of the evidence that we heard on the first day of this inquest, and that was from a phone call made by Noah's mother, Fiona, on the evening just before 10 o'clock of the 21st of June when he went missing. A 25-minute 999 phone call played to the jury. What did she say in that?
She's frantic in it, breathing heavily. And look, this is every parent's worst nightmare. We know that. But she begins in that conversation, aside from describing Noah and giving the police all the initial information that they need, she begins to offer information that she had been a little bit worried about Noah in the preceding weeks. Just that day, in fact, that Sunday afternoon, she'd walked into his room and she thought he'd been crying. And he denied crying. He said, no, I was laughing. But she didn't believe him. The week before that, noticing a little change in his temperament, she contacted the school. Now, the school said to her, nothing to worry about, he's 14, this kind of stuff is normal, but if you want to send him into study groups here, you can. And we can also put him in touch with the school counsellor if you'd like. And remember, it's June 2020, we are in lockdown in Northern Ireland, so Noah hadn't been at school or seen his mates in person for a number of months at this stage. And we also know from that 999 call and then from the evidence of his two best friends, Jay and Charlie, who are now young men, they're 19, 20, that he was reading at the time a book by the Canadian psychologist Jordan Peterson. Now, Jordan Peterson, for those who know him, they'll probably have an opinion on him, but his book 12 Rules for Life was something that was dominating Noah's thoughts at the time, according to the people around him. Jordan Peterson is a controversial figure. He's seen as a commentator and author. He's on the political right, if you like, when it comes to culture wars in recent years, and his mantra is based on kind of traditional values, traditional gender roles, how to be happy in life, taking personal responsibility. He has many, many fans, particularly according to Noah's friends among young men, but he equally divides opinion and some aren't so convinced by his worldview. But his book was rarely out of Noah's hand in the days leading up to his disappearance, and that has fed into a larger conversation about what state of mind Noah was in, and that's for the jury to come to some kind of decision on.
Okay, but his mother said in that phone call, in that 999 phone call, that him not returning after heading out on his bike was completely out of character. And that's why she was so concerned about him.
Absolutely. And she also says that when the police took their notes, and we've seen from police witnesses this week, she, through her barrister to the jury, is making it clear that she believes that the concerns over Noah's state of mind is being overstated, or was overstated, or overinterpreted by the police. That in their notes, they say that she described him as a weepy child. She rejects that completely. She says that she thought she'd been crying that day, but that is not the same as a weepy child, and she had concerns. But it's clear from the narrative that her barristers are asking around that they think this has been blown out of some proportion. But again, it's up to the jury to decide. And just on the note of the jury, I think it's interesting, Ciara, it's a jury of 11 people. This is not usual for an inquest to have a jury. The role of an inquest is not to find anyone guilty or not guilty. It's to answer a simple set of questions. Who died, when they died, where they died, and how they died, in what circumstances. You don't normally get a jury here, but it has been granted in this case because of the exceptional nature of it. But it took 2.5 days from a pool of 200 potential jurors to cut it down to 11, because they had to find 11 people who weren't, they felt, in any way influenced or would be biased because of the noise around this case. And it was so unprecedented, they said it could only be compared to the process that went in to selecting a jury ahead of the Hillsborough disaster inquest in Liverpool.
Let's go back to that date, the 21st of June 2020. His mother contacts the police. He's reported missing. A police officer comes to her home, and then a search does eventually begin for him. Tell us about that subsequent search, the sightings of Noah that were reported to the police, and the eventual discovery of his body.
So what you find is a curious trail of breadcrumbs throughout North Belfast, and again, and it's important in places like Belfast, through a part of Belfast that Noah wouldn't necessarily be expected to be in or know. So his phone is discovered in a play park. The person who found it believed that it had been tossed in. It wasn't left carefully. It had just been thrown in. We know that a few hundred yards up the road from other witnesses, but a few minutes later, that Noah was seen falling from his bike. Apparently with no particular cause. He wasn't pushed, for example. He fell off his bike. Eyewitnesses say he looked a little bit shy and embarrassed. They certainly didn't say that he had suffered any head injury as far as they could tell. He was wearing a helmet. He got back up on his bike, but left his coat behind. He continued to cycle up, and a few hundred metres up the road again, he turns off the main road into this Northwood housing area. And an eyewitness sees him starting to take off his helmet. His helmet is then discovered the next day lying on a footpath. He turns a corner up into a cul-de-sac, and eyewitnesses see him then from, there's a number of them, from inside their homes, see a figure, and we now know it is Noah, cycling past with no clothes on. This is a 14-year-old on an evening, a Sunday evening. It was Father's Day. They thought at the time it could be a Father's Day prank. It was an adult going past. But they went out to investigate on the road, and they could see that Noah had left his T-shirt across a wall. His trainers were described as being set neatly on the footpath, and we saw photographs of them in court, and they are perfectly side by side next to the wall on the footpath, pointing in the direction that he was travelling. His shorts and boxer shorts also abandoned on the footpath. And then towards the top of the cul-de-sac, his bike is discovered with the wheel facing up in the air. The closest person we think to having seen him getting off the bike didn't see him. He'd been standing right at that point about 50 seconds before. CCTV tells us that. But he'd gone inside a house and then Noah arrived. And the next thing we know is that Noah's body is discovered around a kilometre inside a fully covered storm drain. The entrance to that storm drain is on the other side of a house from where the bike was found, but there's no clear access, no easy access, certainly no public access into this culvert. You would have to go through private property, a front garden, a back garden, in order to access the entry to the culvert, which had a grill on it.
There was one other piece of evidence, Declan, that wasn't actually shared with his family, I think, until a number of years after he went missing. And that's this CCTV footage of Noah leaving the apartment block that he lived in with his mother the night before he disappeared. Tell us about that.
It's the middle of the night. We haven't seen the CCTV footage in court yet. That hasn't been played to the jury, but it has been mentioned, and it was put to Noah's two friends. It's around 3 o'clock in the morning, and we know that Noah left his apartment near the Ormo Road, for those who know it, in Belfast, for a while, and then came back. He was back at home by about 4 a.m. because we know there were messages to his friends at that early hour of the morning. They happened to be awake as well, but they said it was lockdown. We were bored. We were awake and asleep at any time during the day or night. Routine had gone out the window. But they're not sure and can't offer any opinion as to why Noah left his house in the middle of the night that night. As you say, Fiona wasn't aware of it until much, much later on. But if you add the leaving in the middle of the night to the fact that his phone was thrown away, to the fact that he was seen with no clothes on, cycling up, to the fact that he entered a storm drain that is not easily accessed, you begin to understand the many, many questions. And if I can add just one more element that we've been hearing about this week, which, again, in the mix of questions and unanswered questions, is really so unusual. We've heard from three residents who live in and around the storm drain, within hundreds of metres of the storm drain, who, in the early hours of the Monday morning, reported hearing high-pitched screams. They struggled to define them more than that. They said it might have had a moan, perhaps, but they thought it was a child or a woman screaming. One woman thought it could have been teenagers, but she got out of bed and listened from her window, and she said, "I would have expected, if it was teenagers playing, that it would be followed by laughter or other noise, and there was nothing." So she heard the scream from her bed, went to the window, then went downstairs and got her husband on the couch, then went out to the back window and or back garden. And when they were both outside, they both heard a second scream. And then a half hour later, a woman a few hundred metres away, she heard a separate scream. That was at 12:30. The nature of these screams, we don't know. Barristers for the police have asked, could it have been a fox's scream? And none of the witnesses say that they're familiar with what a fox's scream sounds like, and they think it was a human scream. Another neighbour at 3 a.m. in the morning was sleeping downstairs because of her health, and at 3 a.m. she reports somebody trying the handle on her back door. She was frightened. She hid under the blankets. She can answer no more about it, but she says it happened. And so all this also in the mix for the jury to consider what was happening.
Let's just move to the role of the police in this, because they have been giving evidence over the last couple of days about their interaction with Fiona on the day that he went missing, and indeed in the subsequent days. What have they been saying, Declan?
We've only heard from two of them so far. And what you're getting is, if you like, lower ranking officers who responded in the first instance, and then the next team who took over at 7 a.m. on the Monday morning. And there has been a little bit of criticism from Noah's mother's legal team about the quality of note taking. But we know in the initial stages, the disappearance of Noah was ranked as medium risk. Now, let me help you with that. They say that they get missing persons reports every day to the PSNI in Belfast. It can be from children as young as 10 up to 85-year-olds. And although it sounds medium risk may not sound like it's been treated particularly seriously, that would be to misunderstand that they say that actually a medium risk does entail a potential risk to life. So they say we do take medium risk seriously. It's just that there's a higher category. And once it goes to high risk, that is when a public appeal will happen. And Noah was changed from a medium risk to a high risk just after midnight on the Monday morning. And that's when a Facebook appeal went out across all the police accounts in Belfast. And we've heard time and time again from witnesses that it was the Facebook appeal that alerted them to a missing boy. And then it was people in the Northwood Road area who clocked what they had seen the evening before, and that's what led police there. But again, it was 6 days later that Noah's body was discovered a kilometre almost inside the storm drain.
There was a police investigation launched at the time, Declan, but there was no major breakthrough across the nearly 6 years since he went missing. Why has it taken so long then, given all of the details that you've just outlined, for this inquest to take place?
It's a great question. And look, it's coming up to 6 years. But I think it goes some way to describe the complexity of this case, that when you are trying to understand not just elements of the death itself and toxicology reports, but there's technology involved, laptops and Kindles. But you also have quite a huge area of a busy city to cover, from the south to the north. There are potentially hundreds of hours of CCTV footage, and all of that has to be pieced together.
The inquest is expected to last for 12 weeks, Declan. We're in week three now. Who else do we expect to hear from?
Well, we're going to hear from lots of members of the Police Service of Northern Ireland, not just at a junior rank, but at a senior rank, and those leading the investigation. But there will be experts on toxicology, and we can expect the themes that have been pulled out in these first initial 3 weeks, which really have just been, if you like, building the skeleton of the story. I would anticipate that we'll be reversing back and pressing on each element in a little bit more detail. But look, you will know this. These schedules for large cases can slip very easily. They think it might last around 2.5 months. The anticipation is that it will last closer to 3, perhaps 3.5 months. But at every turn of it, there are so many questions that I think it will build a fascinating picture and hopefully, and this is the point, of course, hopefully provide answers for Fiona, who's Noah's mum, and her family and Noah's friends as to what happened this talented, able, friendly, fun 14-year-old who left home on that Sunday evening and never came back.
Because as you say, Declan, and I would know that from driving to Dublin, to Donegal, via Oma, via Strabán, for years now I have seen those posters, those banners. Justice for Noah, the Noah Donoghue Foundation, she has been pushing for years now, hasn't she, for this moment?
Yeah, she has. And there have been warnings upon warnings, Ciara, to people on social media to, if I could put it this way, be quiet. Let this process run its course. The judge has said it time and time again. And, you know, there are legal restrictions under the laws here, and it's the same in the Republic, but in Northern Ireland, there are laws around contempt of court. So the conversation even that we're having now, that I'm having with you, that we're having every evening on our podcast, are within boundaries set by a court, that nothing can be said that would give a substantial risk of any serious prejudice to this process. This has to play out in real time for the jury. These 9 men and 2 women, they have to be given the time and space to look at the facts as available to all the teams taking part in the inquest, and the teams being legal representatives for Noah's family, for the PSNI, for the Department of Infrastructure here, who would be responsible for the storm drain and other individuals. And we'll get to them in time. But there's a lot of pressure being put on everybody, I think, to be responsible. And the judge, who is a senior High Court judge, acting as a coroner in this case, but he's been brought in again because of the gravity of it, but he's being unequivocal. He wants less noise, no discussion or analysis or comment online. He wants to shut that down to let this process run its course. Now, whether people are listening to him or not is another issue, Ciara, as is always the case. But they are working very, very hard within the court to try and protect the hygiene around this process so that the jury can come to their decision. And then that will be, I suppose, the definitive answer of what happened, Noah.
Declan Harvey from BBC Northern Ireland, thank you so much for joining me here on News Talk Daily. And you can follow all of Declan's reporting on the Noah Donoghue inquest in a special State of Us podcast series. And we'll put the link to that in the show notes. Thanks, Declan. Now, before I go, I'd like to bring you some of the reaction to our recent podcast about the government's decision to abolish the so-called triple lock. And thanks to all of you who emailed your thoughts to newstalkdaily@newstalk.com. This one came from Joseph in Tipperary. He says, having listened to your podcast in relation to the triple lock, it feels like the government is being bullied by a few bad actors who are hell-bent on increasing spending on armaments. It's not for nothing that Trump renamed his Department of Defence to the Department of War. This increase in budgets will deplete from spending on housing, social welfare, health and so on. It's warmongering instead of promoting peace. Our neutrality is respected worldwide. Will we let a few bullies dictate where our taxpayer money goes? If our government is hell-bent on abolishing the triple lock, we should have a referendum. Thanks for sharing your thoughts, Joseph. Let's keep the conversation going. And that's it for today's podcast and indeed for this week. I'll be here with another edition of News Talk Daily on Monday morning. Do check out all the previous episodes of News Talk Daily. Talk to you soon.